My name is Josh Gilliland, and welcome to the first episode of The Legal Geeks. With me today is Jessica. Jessica?
Hi, Josh. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you very much for joining our first episode. Jessica, why don't you tell the world a little bit about yourself?
My name is Jessica Meterson, and I'm a legal geek. I'm a lawyer by profession, but a geek by love. My geekiness started when I was 7 or 8 years old, when my father introduced me to the John Carter of Mars series, and I fell in love with John Carter, Tars Tarkas, Deja Thoris, Thuvia, and I've been a sci-fi geek ever since. I was also a dork for a good decade or two, but I've been a geek through and through since John Carter.
How do you feel about Lieutenant Gulliver Jones, then?
Who's Lieutenant Gulliver? Who?
he was in the John Carter universe. Different author introduced him. He was a little more hapless, but, you know, in the second League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comic book series, when they begin with the War of the Worlds, they have John Carter and Jones, so that's who it begins with.
That is an area where I am lacking. I need to work on my comic books, especially the League of Ordinary Gentlemen, and what is it, the Watch... The Watchmen, is that the graphic novel?
Watchmen, yes. Again, an epic from the mid-1980s. Again, we'll talk more about this, and we'll have some more fun with that. But
And how about you, Josh? Can you tell us about yourself?
Sure. Again, I'm an attorney, and if the bow tie didn't scream geek, you know, my pedigree sure does. My geekiest moment when this all began, because as a boy, I did draw pictures of spaceships. And maybe it was the fact that my father was the lead technician on installing the tiles on the space shuttle Columbia.
Wow. So
my earliest memory was of the rollout of Columbia. But that's only part of the story. When I was 5, in 1980, my mother took me to the premiere of Empire Strikes Back. And those who remember that glorious summer day in 1980, we saw it at the Century 21 in San Jose, California. And, you know, the line went through the parking lot. And stuff like that doesn't really happen much anymore. Sure, you know, I saw the midnight premiere of Avengers, and there were a lot of people there, and it was a rip-roaring good crowd. But, you know, that was special. The line going around the parking lot, and it was hot. And when we finally got into the theater, you know, I was a much shorter person back then. And the chair, you know, kind of enveloped me. And as my mother loved telling the story, I sat there the entire time, transfixed, apparently not blinking for the entire run of the movie, watching in awe. You don't see movies with that level of storytelling anymore that literally just suck people in. And, you know, part of the issue is I don't hang out with 5-year-olds. So, you know, maybe, you know, there was a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old who watched Avengers totally transfixed, not blinking, not moving. And that's their moment that they will remember for the rest of their lives, that movie magic. But when you have that visual storytelling and a script that draws people in and a director who truly cares, you know, you have something that's magical, that lasts with people a lifetime. So for me, part of that was Empire Strikes Back and helping to find that. There are many others, but again, that's one of my earliest that I remember, and it's a special memory. It was a lot of fun.
That was a great movie. I love that movie.
It is, because, you know, it was real life. It doesn't have a happy ending.
No.
It sets things up for the next time. There isn't enough conflict resolution. And when we learned that Vader was, you know, Luke's father, the shock and terror that in 1980, because no one saw that coming. Today it's a pop culture joke. But back then, you literally heard cries of people in total shock. And God bless Lucas for being able to do that. I mean, that was utterly fantastic. So, and that's why, you know, a lot of people from Gen X and Gen Y really identify with that movie and that moment because of the storytelling that took place and to just literally envelop someone so completely. Now, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, being a geek. And you know, what are some of your favorite geek quotes out there?
Well, I don't know if Caddyshack counts as geeky, but I can quote Caddyshack all day long. But if we're narrowing it more to sci-fi, I'm not the queen of quotes. But my favorite moment, one of the ones that gives me chills no matter how many times I watch it, is in Star Trek VI with the Klingons who could quote Shakespeare. I love those Klingons. But, you know, where they also came up with a technology that the Klingon vessel could be cloaked while firing. And so Kirk, of course, and Spock are trying to figure out how they can possibly shoot at this cloaked Klingon ship. And they figure out that they can put the heat-seeking device in the photon torpedo. So Spock and Bones go running up, of course, and they're bantering. I love their banter. They're bantering as they're trying to modify the photon torpedo, and Kirk is asking for it. And then finally, when they slam it all together, and they say, locked and loaded, and Kirk goes, fire. And the chills, I get chills even now just thinking about him. I'm not even going to attempt a Shatner impersonation, but that is one of my all-time favorite movie moments. I just love that, and I love Kirk so much in that moment.
It's tough not to, you know, love James Tiberius Kirk. You know, one of my favorite geek quotes, you know, if I were on my deathbed, my dying words might be, the ship out of danger. Because the entire end scene of Star Trek II, with the chilling exchange with the dying Spock and Admiral Kirk going, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one, was profoundly powerful. And again, this is one of the highlights of movie going in 1982. And there were fantastic movies that summer, from Blade Runner to Tron to E.T. and many other fantastic films in 1982. But Wrath of Khan, the death scene, because no one saw that coming. Mm-hmm. You know, when the movie begins with the Kobayashi Maru test, and you see the different characters die during the test, no one knew that was a test at that point in time. So everyone was very confused with, who is this Lieutenant Savick, and why are all these things happening? But then to go to the end, to actually see, you know, the character without emotion, having a very emotionally packed death on everyone who was there, and you have, you know, the person who's with the Vulcan half-Romulan Savick, you know, crying during Kirk's eulogy, was profoundly, profoundly sad and very.
I'm getting sad now.
And when they did that, when they premiered that film, no one knew Spock was going to die, and so people were openly crying during the premiere. And then when it ends with before the closing credits with Leonard Nimoy's magnificent voice, you know, sang the Star Trek prologue with, you know, which had never been done before because it always had been William Shatner's voice. Standing ovation, you know, brilliant storytelling. And those are the things that stick with people, that people remember and they care about because it drew them in. Yes, it's spaceships and a nebula slugging it out. But you then work in this beautiful story about sacrifice and loyalty. You throw in a little father-son relationship with I'm very proud to be your son. And it's like, this was one of the best sci-fi movies ever, hands down. And so there are many other greats, but, you know, if I'm going to narrow it down to top five, Star Trek II is in the top five, if not at number one, because it is so good.
Wow. All right, I'll have to think about my list. That'll be an interesting discussion we'll have, top sci-fi movies.
And that'll be another podcast in the future. Now, what do you love most about being a geek as we, you know, conclude our first broadcast?
I think at this point, the geek culture has so infiltrated pop culture that because I have been a geek now for more years than I care to think about, there are so many references to it that you do catch. I mean, obviously the Star Wars and Star Trek references are some of the most common, but you see a lot of other sci-fi and kind of geeky references popping up everywhere that I find I enjoy a lot more than some of my other friends who were much cooler than I was in high school, but now they're not because they don't get all the cool geek references. So I think I appreciate that, how those 20 years I spent watching those movies and reading all these geeky books are finally now paying off because I get to see them pop up everywhere. How about you?
Well, You know, back in long ago in the '80s, back in the good old Reagan days, you know, I was a Star Trek, Star Wars, and Doctor Who fan before it was cool or socially acceptable. You know, that was a wonderful way to, you know, not hang out with people when people found out that you enjoyed watching Doctor Who on one of the PBS channels, because, you know, this was long before the Sci-Fi Channel existed, mm-hmm. or BBC America or anything else. So, you know, you were staying up late to watch Doctor Who, and I utterly loved that. I went to several of the conventions when the local PBS channel had Sylvester McCoy. You know, we went to see him speak before they premiered, you know, his adventures as the Seventh Doctor. And back then, you didn't admit that in public without fear of, like, you know, not being accepted by others. And in today's day and age, people are openly geeky, and part of the reason for that is Gen X and Gen Y are now the ones in charge. They're the ones with creative control to make things happen. And so you have people who loved that material in their youth calling the shots. And a funny thing's happened. The people who are growing up now, who are teenagers now, or 7 years old now, like that.
Yes, they like... do.
You know, they love David Tennant. They love Matt Smith, who I probably should send thank you cards to for making bow ties cool. You know, I appreciate that, Matt. If you're watching this, thank you. But the thing that I find fascinating is, you know, the number of teenagers who enjoy it. And this, I've seen it with the mock trial students I coach, that, you know, the girls love Doctor Who. And that is utterly fascinating. Because in my youth, that didn't happen, at least not with the ones I went to school with. Now it's socially acceptable. So, you know,
school a decade or two too late.
It's okay. I don't mind being in my 30s now. I'm okay with where I am in life. But it's a fascinating journey to see how geeks were on the outside, that they were the ones in the 70s staying at home building computers. They were the ones writing stories. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, they started making them. You have a generation that grows up watching that, and that generation is now the one in charge at many wonderful companies that deliver quality family entertainment. And, you know, you see, you know, the you know, references to geekdom in there, like, say, Megamind, where they worked in the training with Titan, a little scene from Donkey Kong. God bless them for being that wickedly clever and throwing stuff in for the parents who remember playing that video game. So you will always see geekdom, and, you know, sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's overt, but we'll dissect it, we'll talk about legal issues. This has been our fun introduction, and we'll jump into a lot of issues with the law and being a geek in our upcoming episodes and on our blog. Jessica, final words?
I'm looking forward to it, Josh. Thanks.
Thank you all.